Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:09 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is April 11th, and I thought we'd kick off today and look at Bitcoin. It's up over $1,000, so importantly here, closing above the psychological 30,000 level, and it's been consolidating in a pretty tight, consistent manner for most of the last month, and this is a significant breakout over the last 2 days. Now, there's a lot of debate about what's exactly happening. But I think it's important to just realize that Bitcoin is a liquidity barometer and it reacts probably more acutely to liquidity considerations than just about anything else. So it surged in the middle of March, right around the same time that the assistance was being provided to the regional banks in the USA. There was a big jump in the size of the Fed's balance sheet. Lots of people consider that to be a new form of quantitative easing, even though it doesn't quite meet the textbook definition. And it was off to the races. So we should really just then consider this to be a breakout in response to the promise of more assistance being provided. And I think that's particularly important when we think about, for example, the fact that Bitcoin is outperforming Ethereum. And this isn't all that surprising. Now, so Ethereum has got up to test the 2000 level. Now, something that I've noticed in the past, and this is equally true of the precious metals, is that they don't all go at the same time, but rather that the big ones go first. So it's usually gold breaks out first, then silver follows, then we see the large miners doing better, then the smaller miners, then the explorers, and they tend to go in that sequence. So Bitcoin's breaking out. Now there are reasons why Ethereum is not performing right now that are unique to that particular token, which is that there is a new fork about to go live tomorrow, that a lot of the Ethereum that have been staked and locked up, some of that supply has the potential to come back onto the market, and obviously excess supply would drive down the price. But I think when we think about why is Bitcoin breaking out, well, I think it really does have a lot to do with what's happening in the bond markets. The 10-year yield is hovering here around the 3.4% level. This is the lower side of the range that's been in place now since September. It's the upper side of the underlying range that took place before that. And now the big question: is the Federal Reserve going to continue to raise rates? And are they going to do what is necessary to get inflation back under control? And this question is going to become more relevant tomorrow because we have CPI figures coming out at 1:30, and the expectation is that month over month the CPI rate is going to halve. And then ex food and energy, it's not going to come down nearly as much. So that gives us a clear indication of where inflationary pressures are building or have yet to mitigate, which is in the services sector. But then year over year, there's the potential that inflation could be higher than it was a year before, if only by about a tenth of a percent. So this is going to bring front and center some of those big considerations, which is how much inflation do we have and how committed is the Federal Reserve to getting it down? So the inflation target is 2%. I think there's a well understood fact that in order to get down to an inflation rate of 2% would require a deep and potentially lengthy recession. And of course, that would also coincide with a significant jump in unemployment. And the Federal Reserve has two mandates, which are growth and unemployment. Well, I guess growth and employment. So, in the event that there is a recession, you would have higher unemployment. Will they instead then settle for a higher target without actually saying it. I think that is what's being priced into Bitcoin right now, is the understanding that the new inflation target is somewhere between 3 and 4%, and not the stated value of 2%. Now, if one were to really latch on to that conclusion, then you could justify the position that Bitcoin should be going up because it's a limited supply asset, and the halvening is a year from now, and prices tend to do well in the advance to the halvening. About 3 months before the halvening, prices actually tend to go down because the limited supply has already been priced in. And then it is usually after the halvening that we get a big liquidity infusion. So, of course, Bitcoin is not the only asset that is doing better recently. And of course, gold is another limited supply asset. And it was up $13 today and is closing out the day high above the 2000 level. It's the upper side of what's almost a 3-year range. And there is clearly the potential that this is nothing more than a brief consolidation with the potential for a significant pop on the upside. Now, then let's just think about what is happening in the resources sector. So, the copper price has firmed from around the $4 area, but most particularly, it has not really declined. And it's mostly been locked in this range for the last 3 months. And this uptrend that's been underway since the middle of 22 is still in place with a series of ranges, one above another. And then, of course, we have oil prices, which were up about $1.75 in here today. And that is firming within this very short-term range that followed the announcement of the supply cut from OPEC Plus. So, something I find rather interesting right now is the pace of M&A activity is really picking up within the resources sector. So, ExxonMobil is bidding for Pioneer. And the share price was in positive territory today. So investors like the idea of Exxon buying more exposure to the shale properties in the Permian, and also getting that. I think the best way to think about it is getting some elasticity to supply. Because one of the unique characteristics of unconventional oil and gas is that the more you drill, the more you get. And obviously, the less you drill, the less you get. So you get some elasticity to how much you're producing without a lot of m spending a lot of money to do so. And from the perspective of a big international company with operations all over the world, having that elasticity is probably really not a bad idea. But one thing that is quite interesting is the speed with which we've had some of these announcements come out. So Newmont decided they wanted to buy Newcrest, but only within the last month, and the share is steadying from the upper side of this underlying base formation. And we do have to sort of drag the share price back, but that's a long base between 2012 and 2020, and this is really just a first step above that base. So there is obviously clear potential for additional upside. And then, of course, we have Glencore that is attempting to buy Teck Resources. Now, they kind of sweetened the deal a bit in here today. They offered some cash instead of just shares. And they're trying to engineer a solution for shareholders where they won't end up holding coal assets because of the ESG considerations that particularly Canadian investors have. But when we take those two mining mergers, they're two of the largest mergers in history. And in the top 10, three occurred in 2007. And that was very clear at toppy activity, where you had a huge amount of money spent on buying highly appreciated assets. The one big difference on this occasion is that these bids at the moment are mostly for shares and cash, and there's not a whole lot of debt being attached to these mergers. So there is the potential that this uptick in the size of mergers is more similar to when BHP bought Billiton back in 2001. And that was, and well, of course, they had to then unwind basically that merger when they hived off South32. But it was the right idea because back in 2001, prices were depressed. And then subsequently, the share price went on a really impressive bull market and went up 10 times. So now there's a big question, of course, is that we have the very real potential that there's going to be a recession. I think that it is largely inevitable, and the pace of this M&A activity is very very indicative of the end of the cycle overall. We have an inverted yield curve between the 10-year and the 2-year, still negative 60 basis points, and that was a little bit more negative in here today. It has not yet broken up out of this very short-term range. And then we haven't really seen any movement yet in the 10-year minus the 3-month, and that is still at negative 150 basis points. So that's a very depressed level. We haven't seen an inversion like this since the early 1990s. So there is a three-part sequence of events that happens after an inverted yield curve. Generally, prices go up following the inversion. Or I guess they wobble at the beginning of the inversion. Because people are worried about inflation. Then investors take heart from the fact that the central bank is doing something to curtail inflation. And then ultimately, when the yield curve starts to go back up, and most particularly when it crosses back up through zero, then that's usually when we get the most selling pressure in the stock market. Because then investors are worried that the efforts that had been put in place to get in front of inflation have gone too far. And then central banks have to aggressively cut interest rates because they're getting growth surprises on the downside, and there's a very real threat of deflation. So, of course, that is also one of the reasons why investors are betting that the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle is probably going to be immediately after they hike rates in May. And this is, of course, an awfully big question because the dollar index is still rolling over and it hasn't really rallied to any measurable extent and was in negative territory in here today. Now, when we zoom out and look at it on a weekly basis, then we've had the significant peak in the latter portion of 22 and resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, there's the real potential that the dollar is going to continue to trend lower. That will make non-dollar assets more attractive from the perspective of stock market investors. So the Euro Stoxx index is bouncing from the region of the 200-day. It has broken the downtrend and was in positive territory today. The FTSE 100 was also in positive territory and continues to rebound from the 1,000-day moving average and is approaching its peaks once more. Then in China, there is the speculation, at least, that if interest rates come down in the USA, that's going to improve the outlook for Hong Kong. And the H share index is hovering here in the region of the 200-day moving average. Obviously, there's been a big jump in demand for luxury goods, And that's been most particularly true of Hermès, where we've had this big pop on the upside, and the share was in additional positive territory in here today. It's, I think, rather interesting that the wealthiest man in the world right now is the CEO of LVMH, and the share there continues to appreciate and is just a week off its all-time high. But what that also helps to highlight is that we've had an incredible run of demand for luxury goods over the last 15 years. It's been driven entirely by the rise of the middle class in Asia. Then it got a significant boost from the excess supply of cash into consumer pockets over the course of the pandemic. So now that it is a truly global product niche, then what we need is continued global economic growth, and most particularly in the emerging markets. What was, I thought, also interesting, and it is indicative of where the next growth trajectory is for the luxury goods, is that Apple has announced that they're about to open their first Apple store in India. And India has a burgeoning middle class, and they're as the purchasing power of that large group of young people improves, well, then the nouveau riche will inevitably migrate towards luxury goods as well. But Apple is still a highly cyclical stock, and people don't generally tend to buy a new phone until the battery on their current phone stops charging effectively. And there's a 1,000-cycle pattern to lithium-ion batteries, which generally equates to about 3 years of charging. So everybody bought new phones in 21 and 22. The chances are that there's going to be fewer phones sold, or at least that the growth rate is unsustainable. And that would suggest that there is still likely to be a good deal of ranging, and potentially with a lower bias for Apple. And then Microsoft, having spent a ton of money. Now, of course, this was also net cash. They went off and they spent $20 billion on OpenAI, and the chances are that that investment will probably work out over the long term. But what it also suggests is that the company is going to have to continue to make money and have a big cash pile. And a lot of what they rely on are contracts with companies. So the big question, of course, is how sustainable is that in the event that there is a recession? So we're still in that environment where we have had a good-sized rebound. But then the big question is about interest rates. And the technology sector has been driven by the performance of a small number of shares, but most particularly Apple, Microsoft, and Nvidia. And of course, Nvidia, more than any other, has benefited from the hype around artificial intelligence. And now the share is really overbought in the short term. So it could easily fall by about 25% and still be in the region of the 200-day moving average. And I think that there is certainly the clear potential that we're in for a period of consolidation following a strong move. But that is going to be heavily impacted by how people view the outlook for inflation. And I think then there is also an additional consideration. Is the Federal Reserve raising rates to get in control of inflation, or is there an additional string to that strategy, which is to continue to create confidence in the dollar? The fact is that the dollar is going down. So investors appear to be losing confidence that the Fed is going to continue to support the currency. And That's something I think that we need to pay attention to, because gold is at the upper side of its range. Oil prices are still firm, and if they are not willing to get inflation back down to 2%, well, then that pretty much bakes in the potential that inflationary pressures are going to remain higher for longer, and that really improves the chances of a 1970s redux, where there are short, sharp recessions and then spikes in inflation in between periods of deflationary forces. And having had a big rebound after the pandemic splurge, we're due a recession. And then subsequently, it's likely that we'll have a big rebound because of money that will be printed, but it will not be as much money as what happened in the pandemic. And then it could be withdrawn faster. That would probably be the most likely scenario. And that eventually we'll get back to a 2% inflation target, but perhaps not right away. That it might take a recession and then subsequent recovery to get inflation back under control, which would mean that it is not an 18-month project, but more like a 5-year project. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.